Shortwave listening to many the final frontier. These are the voyages of PCJ Radio's Media Network Plus. Its continuing mission to track down strange news signals and to seek out new stations and radio personalities and to boldly go where many men have gone before.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the program. I'm Keith Perron. Today, we're going to have a little bit of fun. Last week, a colleague of mine from more than 10 years ago when I was at China Radio International was visiting Taiwan. Now, many of you may have heard me talk about the strange experiences that I had when I was at CRI. And, well, she also had a number as well. We actually had a number of strange experiences together. And it all started around September the 11th. Actually, in Beijing, it was September the 12th, 2001. Now, you probably know the headline, and this is how we began our program on the CRI domestic service.
China Radio International.
Good morning, everyone. It's September the 12th. The year is 2001. Today we present special coverage of the terrorist attack that took place in New York City and Washington last night, which began around 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Two hijacked commercial jets slammed into the 110-story World Trade Center in Manhattan just before 9 p.m. last night.
Well, that was the opening of a program called Real Time Beijing that aired on the domestic service of China Radio International. That week, I was filling in for the regular host while they were away on holiday. My co-host and co-producer of the program was an American journalist who'd been at CRI 9 months before I was. Her name is Jocelyn Ford. It was an interesting time because the program that we actually had scheduled that day, we threw aside and did something else. I should mention that we had no budget and almost no resources, but we actually managed to pull it off. We also did it without getting authorization from the top leadership at CRI to cover it, because up until that point, none of the other Chinese outlets, except for one, even mentioned it. During CRI's newscasts that were on the air 10 hours before the attack happened, didn't even have a mention.
Some U.S. embassies around the world have closed, and some have been given permission to close.
It is up to each individual embassy. We do not yet know about Beijing. However, the U.S. embassy in Tokyo has said it will not be open for business today. Embassies elsewhere in the world are also closing down, especially in the Middle East. Also, there are reports about what will happen next in U.S. airport security. Airport security will certainly be scrutinized. There will be a lot of soul searching.
American journalist Jocelyn Ford, when we hosted together Real Time Beijing on the domestic service of China Radio International. Well, the fun started after the program because the two of us were summoned to the head of the English language service, almost like children being called to the principal's office. I actually had a chance to meet Jocelyn last week when she was visiting Taiwan, and we found a nice park and we sat in the park and had some coffee, and we had a little bit of a parkside chat, if I can express it that way. I think you'll enjoy it. It was a lot of fun.
So Keith, I remember the first I knew about 9/11 was when you called me into your apartment and said, watch this on TV.
That's right. It was around, if I'm not mistaken, just after 10 o'clock at night, Beijing time. I'd fallen asleep in front of the TV watching BBC. And they did a report that an airplane had hit the Twin Towers, and then another one hit the Twin Towers. And then I called you, and because I was helping that week on Real Time Beijing, and I said, we have to do something. And you were sleeping. You were sleeping. I remember that.
I seem to recall. I would not have known about this had you not reminded me, because we had to get up at 4 in the morning to go out and do this darn show. It went on air live at 8.
Mm-hmm. And I remember that I told you that I was going to head into CRI at that moment to see if I can get somebody on the phone to record some bits.
And we managed to do that. The newsroom was kind of surprised that I would go in to cover it because they said, oh, it's not really that important.
Is that what they told you that evening?
That's what they told me that evening, because their newscasts, which were still going out to Europe and Africa, they still hadn't... There was no mention of it. There was no mention of what happened in New York. And I said, there's no mention. They said, oh, it's not important.
Well, I remember, I believe I went out on the streets and started doing man on the street, person on the street interviews. The intention was to run them... I'm not sure if that was the next night or...
That was the next day. That was the second program, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, the first program, I mean, I remember coming out... So that was a funny week because all of our bosses were out of town. I was a co-producer on the show. I had a Chinese national producer, but he was on vacation. So were all the other bosses. So I just did a news show as I would in any other... for any other news organization. Came out of the studio and said, okay, how are we going to move the story ahead for the next scene, the next program? And they said, what? And I said, who do I speak to here? And they said, oh, our boss is at a meeting. I said, oh, the boss is at a meeting about about the attack on the Twin Towers, right? And he said, no, I don't think so. And I was like flabbergasted. And I said, and then one of the young reporters said, you only think this is big news because you're American. And I said, no, this is going to change the world. Mm.
Just like, for example, the way Paris is now starting to change the world with things. But it was really odd. I remember even in the newsroom, after we did that program, they did mention it in the 9 o'clock news that followed us. But it was almost just, it was like a 20-second story. And then they went on to other things. And I don't remember who was on news shift that day, and I said, maybe it should be longer. And they said, oh, because we don't have an official word yet about what we should say.
Well, I was a bit naive at the time. I thought news was news. I didn't realize we had to wait for the president of the nation, Jiang Zemin, to give the go-ahead before we could broadcast what appeared to me to be a huge news story. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I was still a little naive, even though I'd been there for about 9 months. And it really taught me an awful lot, the difference of when you, as a news person, are serving your audience and what information you think they need or want, and when you're working with a state that tells you what they think is news. I mean, that really, more than any other experience at the news station, crystallized.
Yeah, well, it wasn't really... somebody asked me the same question. I said, it's almost like we weren't serving the audience, but we were serving the masters.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it was crystal clear because one of the other newscasts, I called New York and said, look, we had a correspondent in New York. I said, we need to know how many Chinese were injured or, you know, God forbid, some were deceased. And he said, oh, well, the consulate here isn't giving us information. I said, well, you really need to go out and get that information. He said, why? And I said, oh, my God. I said, well, look, at our audience is people in Beijing want to know if their relatives in New York are safe.
Right. We should also mention, in case somebody doesn't know this, but CRI has two services. There's the domestic service, which was on various FM frequencies around China, which real-time Beijing aired on. And then there was the external service. And the vast majority of the audience for the domestic side was actually the Chinese.
And it was fascinating to me that people, you know, our own correspondents never, ever considered the needs of their direct audience. So this happened to me again when I called the correspondent in Pakistan. I said, well, so what's the reaction among of Chinese traders in Pakistan? And he had never thought of that. And I think it really actually served a purpose because this was news for our correspondents that actually your show should care about their listeners.
Well, I remember when I contacted our New York correspondent, they told me, they said, well, they didn't have time to do anything because they were writing an article for a CRI magazine. And I should mention, the CRI magazine was read only by in-house staff and other government officials. I ended up having to call a friend of mine, Gloria, who lives in Manhattan, that has worked as a freelancer for organizations like the Christian Science Monitor and others. And, you know, it's interesting, Jocelyn, when I listen to that show, I think I'm the only one that now has a copy of it. When I listened to it, considering we had no budget, no resources, a staff, well, I mean, there's morning music shows that have a bigger staff. It doesn't sound too bad.
Glad to hear it after all these years. You know, oftentimes I think when you're putting together a show, it's really more the thought that goes into it. It can be more important than the actual resources. So the fact that we, you know, I thought it was a duh moment that, of course, this is a huge news story, but obviously for the rest of China, it wasn't. In fact, I heard later, I do believe there was one late night TV show on state TV, CCTV, that had run the news before we did. But otherwise, we may have been either the first or second Chinese.
If I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, I think we were the first ones in English, mind you, not Chinese, but to go nationally with the story. I think we were the first ones because China National Radio and Radio Beijing, which is a local station in Beijing, they still didn't have anything even at 9 o'clock or even that afternoon.
No, they had not yet been told that they were allowed to cover this. I mean, we have to remember this was in the days before the internet was so widespread, so that information was not that easy to come by in 2001 in China, unless you had a, you know, shortwave radio or something like that.
The other funny thing, we were just mentioning it a moment ago, was after the program went out and we were summoned to the principal's office, you know, I couldn't... The reason why I was laughing at so much, because it was just so completely ridiculous. I could never think, we have to come to the office, we have to discuss this. I think the reason why they were upset was not that we did it, but the fact that they didn't think about it first.
Well, I'm not sure I agree with you.
No?
There. No, because what happened was, on the weekend, I went to the local church and did a feature story about what people around the world in Beijing saying.
That's right.
It was a human interest approach to a hard news story. And
that was
quite new for them. In fact, the correspondent in New York listened to that and he said he thought it was a wonderful piece and he learned so much from it. Well, the rest of the station, or at least the muckety-mucks up top, didn't seem to think that was such a wonderful piece. And I was told that was one of the reasons we were called in, was that that was not an approved way of handling news. And I recall that they said, somebody complained. Right. And I said, oh, well, who?
Who? We both did. Who complained?
And they just said, we don't know, right? No name was given. A person in the audience. And the assumption was that it was somebody within the organization.
Yeah.
A political position. But anyway, that was funny. They refused because I recall trying to get that information out, you know.
We didn't just ask once. I remember you asked a number of times.
Yeah. Yeah, because I really needed to know how to respond to that person's complaint. But then it was quite clear that it was a political issue and that I was in the doghouse. And I said to them, you know, maybe you need to take me off the show.
Yeah.
Because maybe I'm not the right person for this. And because our show was a real breakthrough, before that, China Radio International, before I came in January, and we probably started up in March or so. And before that, China Radio International, since 1989, had not done any live news programs. Because in 1989, one of their announcers went on the air and told the rest of the world to support the students in Tiananmen Square, which, you know, obviously the consequences, that person later moved to the U.S., I was told, and became a business person of some sort. But as a result, the station stopped broadcasting any news live.
That's right. And CRI, when I joined, because the show had only been going for a few months, They I don't even know if they still have it, but they had a show called CRI News and Reports that was a 30-minute news magazine. And that was for the international service and also for domestic service. And that used to go out at 7 a.m. Beijing time. Famin was the presenter on that. And that one was also done live. CRI News and Reports. She used to go to the studio and do it at 7 o'clock for the U.S. But she only started doing it live just at the same time that Real Time Beijing went on the air.
Okay, so yeah, I don't quite remember that one being live. I thought that was... still pre-recorded.
The editions that came after 9 o'clock in the morning, those were re-edited versions of the 7 o'clock one.
Okay. Right. But so basically what happened was, in Chinese style, they not only decided to have a live news show, but they decided to have the first foreigner, mm-hmm. me, be broadcasting news live.
Remember the pass, the A pass?
And signing your name in when you run into the studio, you've got to sign your name in first. And, you know, I remember a lot of tension at that self-criticism meeting, because when we came out of it, others said, look, it was a huge breakthrough not only to do the first live news show, but to do a livelier news show. We did it in a U.S.-style drive-time radio format with music interludes and sports mm-hmm. and social news, and it was a lot more interesting, livelier, entertaining, should we say, than the traditional news and reports that was the voice of the state and mm-hmm. very somber. And so I had other reporters coming up to me saying, Jocelyn, don't ruin this for us. Don't, if you go too far with your program, they will take it all off the air and we'll lose all that ground that we've gained so far this year.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, it also showed them a way. And the reason I mentioned that, we talked about this earlier, because it wasn't too long after 9/11 that the U.S. invaded Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden. And I remember the day of the invasion, like a lot of U.S. wars, they try to do it during prime time hours for the best TV coverage. And they started doing live CRI coverage at 9 a.m. Beijing time, which was 8 a.m. Eastern time. And they continued that to, I believe, 11 o'clock or 11:30. And you know what? They didn't ask you, they didn't ask me, they didn't ask any of the other foreigners at CRI to help with that program. I still wonder why they did that, or they just thought, okay, we have to show that we can do it to our higher echelons.
Or maybe we were too much trouble for them and they wanted to avoid.
Or we would say, well, you know, you shouldn't be putting this in because this is not confirmed.
I don't remember. Do you have a copy of that show still?
I have a copy of half of it. I still have a copy of half of it.
How does it sound?
Dry.
Okay. Did they try to reach their correspondents around the world at least? And
well, the section of the program that I have is Dear Lin Xiaowen, reading news notes that were coming from Xinhua with audio clips that were taken from CNN and BBC.
Stolen.
That was it, because they did speak to two CRI correspondents, the one in Washington and the one in London, but they really didn't speak in depth. And what was also interesting is, now that show was also going out live, but the interviews that they did with the correspondents had been recorded 2 hours prior to air, and they didn't do any updates during the show. So when they had the Washington correspondent on the line from Washington, they'd spoken to them before the U.S. troops started invading Iraq. So then, 1 minute, Lin Xiaowen is saying, U.S. troops are now invading Afghanistan. And we then spoke to our Washington correspondent. And then she says, well, they're planning to invade. I mean, it was really humorous.
Ouch, 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 ouch. Well, look, things have come a long way now. And we, you know, Chinese media is just like night and day. We're talking ancient history in terms of Chinese developments. And let me mention the reason. I actually thought up the name Real Time Beijing as a joke. Because at the time, news was neither in time or timely. A lot of it was pre-recorded. And a lot of it was not real. So, real time was sort of a trendy word that was just coming in. The internet mm-hmm. was just developing that way back then, and so I was actually on a bus on the way home for Christmas, that right before I was due to come to China, and mm-hmm. and I thought, yes, this will be the name, Real Time Beijing. Wahaha! I wonder if anyone will ever get it.
You know, it's funny about that, because there was a British television show many, many years ago. And the name that the writers and actors in the show gave to the series, and it became the title, they called it At Last the 1948 Show. And it was in reference because they said, you know, British television was stuff, they would come up with an idea, they would shoot it, and then maybe 20 years later it would be on the air.
Okay, well, I'm glad to know it's not just China.
And then but at the same time, when I joined ICR, there was Real Time Beijing, and then I started doing a show called Real Time China that was exported to radio stations overseas. And what was her name? Xu Huajin. She said, what's the name? And I Real Time Beijing was playing in the background. I said, we'll call it Real Time China.
I had no idea that's how it was.
That was
named.
It, yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal now has a Real Time China column, but of course I had the name a long time before that.
Yeah, it was an interesting place to work. I found it a very interesting place to work.
You know, I must say that to this day, some of my best friends in China are from, or my colleagues from mm-hmm. those days. Most of them have left, not all of them, but most of them have left. And the one who is there is the one who came in as a young student the year I was there. We trained him up, and he was like night and day.
Liao Jibo. I still talk to him every now and again when I see him on Facebook. And he told me a very funny story. And I also heard this from a friend of mine who was just in Taiwan, who works on the Thai section of CRI. He said, it's funny. Chinese government blocks Facebook. But he said, we're told to use Facebook to put the story. I said, well, how do you do it? He said, we do like everybody else in the country. We use a VPN to get around the Great Firewall, which is... It's odd, isn't it? I mean, this is how I explain what China is. They say you can't do it, just you can't do it this way. You have to find a way to do it.
Yeah, well, at the same time, China has become much more adept at using strategies used by other countries. It'll block the strategy for its own people, but mm-hmm. they will try to appear, you know, sugarcoat the propaganda, shall we say, at times to get their message out. And look like they're hip and cool and using social media, but it remains highly controlled, despite the fact that social media may give the impression of not being as highly controlled. So.
Well, something that I found interesting is that since we were there, which is quite some time ago now, friends of mine who still work there, they say actually now there's more control than there was when we were there.
You know, the China is like a zigzag line. So things get better, they get worse, they get better, they get worse. I believe the overall trajectory is going in a very positive direction, to be frank. I mean, I find young people much more aware about the world and much more able to talk logically and not always as emotionally as before about global events. That once, you know, you would have said, oh, it's just because you're American, that's why you care, or you are the enemy, et cetera, et cetera. I find that more people now are able to look at me as a human being as opposed to perhaps a spy for the U.S. government or whatever they used to think that.
Did you ever think they thought maybe you were a spy for the CIA?
Absolutely.
But you don't look it.
Well.
That's the perfect kind, actually.
No, I was the first foreigner in the Prime Minister's press corps in Japan, and I was also one of my colleagues there when we were having dinner at an exclusive restaurant, a liote they call them, with the Prime Minister's secretary. He suggested right in front of everybody this would be a perfect place for a U.S. spy. So it's not that, you know, I think any time you are the sort of person who works in different countries, some people will come out of the woodwork and say, well, you must, you know, you've managed to get yourself into these interesting positions. You must be a spy or something like that. But I'm furthest from it, so.
Well, Jocelyn, actually, it's funny because we haven't seen each other so long now. Almost 2006? Since I left Beijing. And just by accident, I read on your Facebook wall that you were here in Taiwan. And that's why we ended up meeting, because you're very close to the airport. So I caught you on your departure, which is actually nice, and hopefully one day you'll be coming back again very soon. But you used to live here. You used to play French horn.
in the Taipei Philharmonic Orchestra for Guomei Zheng. She was the conductor at the time. Yes, it's my claim to fame, I guess.
Well, nice seeing you again, and hopefully we'll catch up again very soon.
I do hope so. I've enjoyed my stay here immensely.
And I was catching up there with Jocelyn Ford, one of my former co-workers from my time at China Radio International. Most of the time, Jocelyn and I didn't work together because she was working for the domestic side and I was working for the external service. But the week of September the 11th, well, I was replacing somebody on Real Time Beijing, and that's how it transpired. Anyway, we hope you enjoyed that little fun conversation that we had last week. You are listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, and it's now time to turn our attention to propagation, what's been happening and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith, IPS in Australia calls for moderately degraded HF conditions for the next few days from December 3rd. The global HF propagation forecast through December 5th, normal at low latitudes, normal to fair at middle and high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa, magnetic conditions quiet, becoming unsettled December 5th. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, the 4-day space weather forecast summary. Solar activity expected to continue at low or very low levels. Geomagnetic activity mainly quiet to unsettled. Later, December 5th, geomagnetic activity may increase to unsettled to active. On December 6th, an increased chance of a minor geomagnetic storm. Peter Coleman, OK1MGW in Prague, predicts the geomagnetic field will be quiet to active on December 4th, 5th, 7th, 8th, 10th, 14th, and 15th. Active to disturbed on December 6th. Quiet to unsettled December 9th, 11th, and 12th. Mostly quiet December 13th and 16th. Quiet on December 17th to 22nd. From SWPC in Boulder, isolated active periods in the geomagnetic field are likely again on December 6th, 7th, and 10th, with ANK indices peaking at 18 and 4 on December 7th, otherwise mostly 8 and 3, but lowest at 5 and 2 from December 18th to 23rd. Solar flux peaking at 115 December 8th to 13th, and dipping to 100 on December 16th and 22nd to 26th. William Hepburn's VHF UHF microwave DX maps call for extreme tropospheric ducting off Namibia through December 6th and west of Baja California Sur on December 8th.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. If you want to contact us to let us know what you think, it's easy to write us. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team here at PCJ, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, hoping to see you again very soon. 73 and 88 to the ladies.